Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Well, hi there. I didn't see you pop in, but log in? Well, I'm not sure really what it would be, but thank you for coming back once again to the Council of Trent. Last week, I hope you enjoyed my interview set. And if you're a premium subscriber, you got to hear part two of that interview with Patrick Madrid. If you're subscribing on iTunes or Google Android or Google Play, whatever you're subscribing to, if you're subscribing there, you might have seen that it was a part one episode, and you might see this from time to time and say, "Hey, there's a part one episode here. Where's part two?" A lot of times, my part twos, you can find those at the website for this podcast, TrentHornPodcast.com. And that's where part two with my interview with Patrick Madrid is there. And you can access that if you're a premium subscriber. So visit TrentHornPodcast.com for more. But I'm here. I'm here in the studio in Catholic Answers because I live here now. That's surprising. I used to live here. But then I moved, relocated to Phoenix several years ago. And for different personal reasons, I thought my family would flourish there, and it's hard to raise people here in San Diego, financially speaking. And yet, I do miss being here in the studio, glancing over and seeing Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Carla Broussard, the sweet cherub face of Nick Chamberlain, our engineer, who waves in the studio, and I will communicate that to you via description, because obviously you cannot hear that. I'll be the assist. It's like if you go to the movies, or I've never really watched this. I guess if you listen to movies, they have narrative assistance if you're blind. I understand captions for those who are deaf, sometimes I just love to have captions on. I like to think that I get away with readings. Like, what have you read lately? Well, I watched a lot of Netflix, but I had the captions on, so that's like reading, isn't it? I don't know if I could really... how one would enjoy a movie with if you're blind and everything's being narrated to you what happens, but that's a separate topic. So I'm here, and we're just trying to get through everything. We're moving into our house, as moving has all of its complexities. If any of you listening have moved, you're aware of. One complexity I'm having and have just resolved is the people who sold me the house. I did my due diligence to call the utility companies and straighten everything out, and they did not, and for reasons I can't get into on the air, we got into our house and for several days did not have gas. So no cooking, no heat, no hot water. Now in San Diego, you're not going to freeze to death, but cold showers and microwave dinners are a bit of a pain. You're moving your family in and you have two small children. But we persevere there, but for the grace of God, go I. And yeah, prayers are always appreciated as we work on this transition, but I'm excited. I'm excited to be here. And for this podcast, especially now that I'm here in the Catholic Answers studio, get ready for, a lot more guests, a lot more interactive elements. I'll be able to start doing video chat sessions soon for my premium subscribers. We've got a lot coming down the pike, so just bear with me. I appreciate your patience. It's just... feeling like you got the weight of the world on your shoulders sometimes. The Greek mythological hero Atlas, if you think about that, if the weight of the world, trying to balance everything and get it all going. And I'm sure you feel that way too. So I'm going to say a special prayer tonight for you, my listeners, because you're probably going through a lot, each of you in your own ways. And that's what I love about our faith, our Catholic faith, is that we pray for one another, and we even ask for help for our brothers and sisters in heaven to pray for us as well. So the topic today, I was thinking, what would be a good topic to talk about? We've talked about a lot of different subjects here on the podcast. I figured at least today, and in future episodes, we're going to talk about more topical issues because I find them fascinating and a lot to say on that. So we will get to those soon. But I want to give you just a general intro to a topic today, because this is one, oh my gosh, we could spend weeks, we could spend months talking about it. I find it fascinating. So we'll get down into it. I want to talk to you about an argument for the existence of God. One of my favorites, or at least one I have a keen interest in, that you see everywhere. And in this episode, I want to break it down. I can't be exhaustive with it. I want to give you kind of an overview, and we'll talk about misunderstandings and different elements of it, because it's a popular argument to share with people who don't believe in God. So the argument, of course, what I'm going to talk about is the Kalam cosmological argument. The Kalam cosmological argument. So let's talk about that, what the argument is, common misconceptions. Today, I just want to do a brief flyby overview. We won't go too nitty-gritty into the details, but future podcasts, we will. We will have fun with that. But let's do a flyover, and as your pilot, I'm going to point out different interesting things along the way. So, Kalam cosmological argument. Number one, this is part of a family of arguments. Because people will say, you know, there's different arguments for the existence of God, like the cosmological argument or the teleological argument. Teleological means design. Telos, the Greek word telos, means design. Teleological arguments come in a family. Some of them focus on the universe as a whole. Some focus on elements of life that don't seem to be explained by natural processes. That's the teleological. Cosmo, Greek word cosmos, world, universe. Cosmological arguments say that the universe as a whole is evidence for the existence of God. And there are a family of arguments like this. And most, throughout history, most of them basically say that the existence of the universe itself demands a divine answer. So the modern philosopher Gottfried Leibniz said that the universe could have failed to exist, so it needs a reason for why it exists, and that reason has to be a necessary cause, necessary being, something that must exist. Since the universe could fail to exist, the cause of the universe must be something that has to exist by its nature, and that would be God. St. Thomas Aquinas, famous cosmological arguments come from him, like the argument from motion. He has his own argument from contingency. We'll get into those on a separate podcast, and I'm sure I'll bring in a guest to talk about them. But the one a lot of people think about when they think about just the universe as evidence for God, these other arguments answer questions like, why is there something rather than nothing? Why is there existence rather than non-existence? Why is there motion? The Kalam cosmological argument answers a simple, intuitive question many, many people ask. Where did everything come from? That there's an assumption that there was a beginning of the universe, and if there were a beginning, where did it come from? Did it come from nothing? If it came from something, what is that thing? Seems a natural candidate to be God. So when you go online and look up atheism, and when atheists and Christians debate the existence of God and the arguments for God, this one is debated all over the place. I mean, look on YouTube. You could find, and maybe in future podcasts we will do this and we will have some fun. We'll take a look at some YouTube videos and we'll debunk the critics. But oh my gosh, you can find hundreds of videos on the Kalam cosmological argument. If you search the first way of St. Thomas Aquinas or the Leibnizian contingency argument, you usually just get a handful. And I think the reason why is two reasons. Number one, the Kalam cosmological argument is very simple compared to the others. It's a very short, it's not a simple argument, it's simple to form, but when you start to get down into it, you see the complexities. And also it's very famous due to its most famous modern day defender, Dr. William Lane Craig, a Protestant philosopher, theologian, teaches at Biola University. Craig was really the one that brought the argument back to life. So to understand that, let me give you the argument and its history. So here's the argument. Premise one, whatever begins to exist has a cause. Premise two, the universe began to exist. Conclusion, the universe has a cause. That's it. Even in philosophy as a whole, it's a very easy to formulate, easy to remember argument. And then you'd say, well, if the universe has a cause, you would logically reason what the attributes of this cause would be. If it created all space, it must be immaterial. All time, it must be eternal. If it makes something from nothing, it's all powerful. It can't be a force or piece of matter. It's either an abstract object or a mind. Abstract objects like numbers and shapes can't cause anything. So we've got a timeless, eternal, all-powerful mind. Ladies and gentlemen, that's basically God. So that's the argument. Now, its history is fascinating. So the first person to defend this argument, probably about the 6th century, was a Christian named John Philoponus. I think that's his name, Philoponus? Anywho, he wrote on the eternity of the world against Aristotle. He was a Christian arguing against Greek philosophers in the 6th century who said, sorry, buddy, Aristotle proved the universe has been around forever and Christians are wrong when they say God created the universe because the universe has been here forever. Fast forward a few more centuries, get to the Middle Ages. St. Thomas Aquinas looks at the question. The Greeks say, hey, Aristotle said universe is infinitely old. God never created anything. St. Thomas Aquinas says, all right, you cannot prove from reason the universe is infinitely old. But you also can't prove from reason that it's finite, that it began in the past. So Aquinas would say, we know by faith God created the universe. And look, even if the universe were eternal, even if you're right, a fortiori is the Latin term. Let's grant the strongest premise of your argument. Even if it were eternal, St. Thomas Aquinas puts forward arguments that show God exists even if the universe were eternal. But at around the same time, St. Thomas Aquinas has a contemporary, St. Bonaventure. And Bonaventure said, hold on a minute. If you think about it logically, the universe can't be eternal. It can't be. And he said that if it were eternal, you would have these kind of logical contradictions that would appear. For example, now the astronomers are going to kill me. I can't remember this. You know, how often does the moon rotate around the Earth? It's supposed to be once a month, right? So I'd say 12 times a year. You know, write an angry comment if I'm wrong about that. So let's say the moon orbits the Earth 12 times a year. The Earth orbits the sun once a year. So as the years passed, you know, in the past 5 years, the Earth has orbited 5 times. The moon has done an orbit, 60 orbits. And so they'll keep growing. Then it'll be 10 and versus 120. When the Earth has orbited the sun 100 times, the moon will have done 1,200 orbits. So they get bigger and bigger and apart. But if the paths are infinitely long, Bonaventure says, wait a minute. Then if it's infinitely long, the Earth will have done infinite orbits. The moon will do infinite orbits. It would be the same even though they've been growing apart. And that's contradictory. And so that was the argument, saying that an infinite past is contradictory. All right, what do we do with that? Well, that was one, since St. Thomas Aquinas is the biggest figure in the Middle Ages, Bonaventure's reasoning didn't super take off. Then later you had people like Immanuel Kant, David Hume, Bertrand Russell, lobbing objections at this kind of argument. And people said, well, philosophers in the 20th century said, look, even by the 20th century, in early 20th century, science seems to show the universe is infinite. These arguments don't work. The universe may or may not. It's probably eternal. These arguments don't work. So how does it change? In the 1950s, I think Stuart Hackett was writing on this argument, and he was playing around with it a bit. And around that time, a little bit later, William Lane Craig was working on his doctorate. He saw the argument, thought it was really interesting, wondered why it had been abandoned, and he made it his thesis for his philosophy PhD. And in 1979, he published a book on it, The Kalam Cosmological Argument. And what was also helping bolster the argument was that, you know, 20 years earlier, around that time, Big Bang cosmology was really coming into its own, showing, hey, we've got scientific evidence for a beginning of the universe. And that gives confidence for Craig and others to put forward a philosophical case saying, hey, the universe began to exist. We can know this by logical reasoning. And look, science is even supporting this. And so Craig has really been defending the argument ever since. And it's gotten a lot of prominence because Craig uses it as one of his main arguments when he does debates against atheists. And so a lot of people interact with the argument by watching YouTube videos. They see it there. And then people interact with it back and forth, and that's where atheists kind of interact. And I find many atheistic objections to the argument really rest on misunderstandings of it because they're just looking at, like, YouTube videos. They're not reading important literature on the subject. Though I will say there's not a lot of literature on this argument, surprisingly. There are journal articles, there's essays, but very few people have written full books on the argument. So Craig wrote one in 79, probably the thickest treatment you'll find today. In the Blackwell Companion to Natural Theology, Craig and his co-author James Sinclair, They write a long, long essay defending the argument. Craig gives the argument from mathematics, showing an infinite past is impossible, and Sinclair talks about the scientific evidence for the beginning of the universe. Otherwise, I think there's an atheist who wrote a book on this argument, critiquing it, but I've seen some excerpts. I wasn't very impressed, but maybe I'll deal with it in a future podcast. Another person who thinks the argument goes well, this is a really cool book. Mark Nowacki wrote a book called The Kalam Cosmological Argument for God. I think it's Nowacki. It might be Nowicki. Mark Nowacki or Nowicki. I think it's Nowacki. He wrote The Kalam Cosmological Argument for the Existence of God. And it's a really cool book because it goes beyond where Craig argues in some of his literature and some of the material. So let's go back. So that's the history. While I have a little bit of time with you, let's briefly go over the argument. And I just want to talk about general misunderstandings people have. And you know what? Stay tuned with me. We'll talk about general misunderstandings because next week, I have a special gift for my premium subscribers this week I think you all will like. But next week, we will continue our discussion and we'll drill down deeper into these different premises because I think it's a fascinating argument. So let's remember, what is the argument? Whatever begins to exist must have a cause for its existence. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause for its existence. Simple argument. What are the biggest misunderstandings? All right. The biggest misunderstanding with some atheists when they hear this argument, they think it can just be answered with this rebuttal. Well, if everything needs a cause, what caused God? If everything needs to be created, what created God? But notice the argument never mentions the word God, actually, and that's not a premise in the argument. The argument is not saying everything needs a cause, the universe exists, therefore the universe needs a cause. Because, yeah, that's a bad argument, because then you can ask, well, what caused God? But it's not. The premise is whatever begins to exist must have a cause for its existence. Whatever begins to exist. But God never began to exist. The universe began to exist, so what's the cause of the universe? And so what's funny is when atheists hear this argument, sometimes they just leapfrog over it to make objections that are irrelevant. Or they'll say, well, even if this argument works, it doesn't prove Christianity. It doesn't prove the Bible. But it's not supposed to. It's one part of a cumulative case that first you show God exists philosophically, then you would show historically that God revealed himself. So I would say, okay, yeah, it doesn't prove Christianity, but it does disprove atheism. So that's a problem if you're an atheist. They'll say, well, how do you know the cause is God? Okay, well, that's where we go a little bit deeper. As I said, that first, if you have a cause, we should ask, what kind of cause is it? And people, some atheists will say, we have no idea. We have no idea what the cause is. We'll never be able to know if it's God. Who cares? So listener, if you encounter this, if you have someone who says, fine, there was a cause, maybe it's gravity. Maybe it's an alien. Who knows what the cause is of the universe? How does that show that it's God? Well, I'd say if you have a universe that began to exist and it has a cause, that really points in a direction away from atheism. Why? Well, you can ask certain questions like this. Here's a good one to start. Whatever the cause of the universe is, people will say, we have no idea what it could be. You can use mutually exclusive questions, things that exhaust all possibilities. So I might ask, let me ask you a question. The cause of the universe, it has to be either material or immaterial. Well, maybe, you know, it's one or the other, right? Well, it could be a third thing. Like what? There's either made of matter or not made of matter. Now, if the universe is all of space and time and all matter, well, then the cause can't be made of matter. The cause can't be made of stuff, because if the cause were, let's say, an alien made the universe in existence, aliens occupy space, they live in time, they presumably breathe air or breathe things, they move. If this cause of the universe, this cause made all space and time and matter and energy, it can't be made of matter and energy, and it can't be in space and time. So the idea that it's a material cause doesn't work. Even a force like gravity, forces only make sense in a material world. Forces are interactions between matter. So the cause can't be material. It's got to be immaterial. So then you can ask, well, what kind of immaterial things could cause the universe? What kind of immaterial things are possible? And there's really only two kinds of immaterial things not made of matter. And that would be abstract objects, like numbers or shapes or propositions, like the snow is white, I go to the library, voy a la biblioteca. Now, a real philosophy nerd thing here. Propositions are different than sentences. A proposition is a truth, and truths are not dependent on language. It's the essential idea. So if you remember your Spanish one, I go to the library and voy a la biblioteca. That's the same proposition, but they're different sentences. So the idea is that truth is immaterial. Numbers, shapes, they're not made of matter, but they don't make stuff. You know, a square or a number three, the number three can't cause anything. So there's abstract objects, but they can't cause stuff. The only other immaterial thing anybody can conceive of is a mind. Minds are immaterial. We see brains, but you can't find somebody's mind. You can't shine a light and look at somebody's thoughts. So, okay, this cause then, if it's immaterial, but it's not an abstract object, I think a mind would make sense. A spaceless, timeless mind? Sounds like God. So that's a way to go there. So I think you'll find that when people hear this argument, they'll try to misunderstand it and say, oh, are you saying that if God created everything, what created God? No. Or if everything needs a cause, what caused God? I'm not saying that. I'm saying whatever begins to exist has a cause, and the universe began to exist, so it has a cause. Now, at that point, some people will say, well, how do you know God never began to exist? Because it's part of the definition of God. That's like saying, well, how do you know a unicorn has one horn? That's just the definition of God. If God exists, he's eternal. He's got to have these divine perfect attributes. And this objection, if God created everything, what created God? That's like saying, if the locomotive pulls the train, what pulls the locomotive, smart guy? Well, the locomotive is not like the other boxcars. It can pull itself. It explains why the boxcars move. God is not like the universe. God caused the universe to come into existence, and God explains why the universe came to be. The universe requires this kind of immaterial, eternal, transcendent, all-powerful cause that we see in God. And yes, the argument does not prove Christianity, but it does prove an essential element of Christianity, that God exists and he created the universe, and then that paves the way to prove the other tenets of the Christian faith. If anything, it definitely strikes a death blow to atheism, or it should make one really seriously reconsider their naturalistic worldviews. So that was our overview. And you know what? On this flight, there was so much I didn't get to touch on. So I tell you what, we're going to turn the plane a little bit, and we're going to fly over this again one more time, because, I mean, like I said, I could spend weeks and weeks and weeks on this. And maybe for the premium subscribers, I'll do another little something special on this argument. So next week, we will do a part two, and it will be a regular episode you can download. I promise you that. But I hope you'll come back, because let's go into the argument a little more in detail. And next week, I will bring with me YouTube videos of atheists who think they've got this argument refuted, and I'll show you they don't got nothing. That is a double negative, that this argument, that it's death, to quote Mark Twain, that it's death, reports of its death have been greatly exaggerated. So check with us next week. And if you want more premium content, go to trenthornpodcast.com. And be sure to leave a review for the podcast on iTunes or wherever you downloaded it, because that helps more people come to know the podcast and be equipped to explain and defend their Catholic faith. You guys are great. Thanks for stopping by. And really looking forward to continuing the discussion next week. So you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.